Well, thanks for coming back. That means a lot. It means a whole lot. And, hey, how about giving Ransom a hand? He was our guy working the slides for us, huh? Didn't he do a great job? And speaking of great jobs, how about the worship team tonight? Yeah, all day long, it's been good stuff. And I'm glad they added a fiddle to the group. Well, that's what we call it in Mechanicsville. Y'all might call it a violin because you're upper crust. But, yeah, we want a good old hoedown to happen. So I'm glad we got the fiddle now joining us. So what about your marriage? I don't know, I just thought I'd ask that in case anybody wanted to be transparent. You know, when we're talking about the gifts, we're hoping that in your relationships with other people, but in particular with your spouse, you're finding some rich opportunities to build bridges, understanding how they live and function and things of that nature. So many times that what we've discovered is that what people need in marriage counseling to get through troublesome times is the understanding of the gifts, because they just don't understand the person they're living with. And so it can be amazingly helpful to as you guys get to share and move forward with that. And I'll also mention that about your kids. We've got three kids, boy, girl, boy, and our youngest is Michael. And Michael's a perceiver. Michael's a lot like me. He's a perceiver, and so he is a rule follower. And we were on the east coast of North Carolina, there over in the States, where it's nice and warm, and the beach there today, I'm sure it was sunny all day long and 86 degrees. Just wanted to mention that today. So we were, cheers, right? So we had to get on a ferry to get off an island. And so we were in the car, got the car in the ferry. We got up and got going. And the captain of the ship, he said that, you know, once the ferry starts moving, you have to stay where you are. Don't climb up any steps or ladders. And that makes sense. So we'd gotten out of the car, scurried up the upper deck, and then we're looking around, and our son Michael is no longer there. And the boat's already launched out from the dock. And so we're a little bit concerned about that for every reason you can think about it. First, there's the Atlantic Ocean, and did he take a dip, or what might have happened to him? And so we're frantically running around, and we go back down on the deck where the car was, and there was Michael sitting in a chair, not moving, because he heard the voice say, "Once the boat starts moving, you must stay on the deck you're on." So even though his parents were frantic, even though we wanted to give him a whipping, we understood a perceiver goes by the rules. Now, if I hadn't known that about my son, I could have gotten into a big argument with him. It could have been a smackdown. But, you know, I understand that was such a value for him that I appreciate him wanting to be like that and never doing it again. So, you are going to have a great relationship with your kids when you understand what their motivational gifts are, what inspires them, what encourages them, because you may be saying something very positive, but some people might even see that as a negative, depending on their gift set and the topic you're talking about. So first, we talked about what? Very quickly, your marriage. Secondly, your kids. How important that is for you to live out your gift and help them live out theirs. I got another Josh story for you. My first trip over to the UK and doing missions happened, I don't know, 20 years ago or more, probably 1995. Yeah. So we came over here. It was absolutely wonderful. He worked with we worked with World Horizons and had a great time. We were working in the Tower Hamlets area of London, and at that time, that wasn't the part of London you wanted to be in. And so there was a great deal of poverty, a great deal of crime, things like that. The place you want to send your 16-year-old kids. Yeah, exactly where we wanted to be. And so there we were in Tower Hamlets, and we had met up with a youth group there, and a dynamic youth group, great youth director, and they were all getting ready to go to a summer camp, and it was going to cost £50 a kid. And so there was this one girl just full of life and vigor, cute as all get out, and she was not able to go because of the financial situation of her parents to go on this retreat. And so you know, we thought about, can we pool our money? And we thought our money might be a little bit too tight. We're not going to be able to spend that on this part of the trip. So as much as we wanted to see her go. And so one of the things we did was to do a prayer walk in a park. So all the teams went out and we were praying. And Josh was on a partnered with one of our team members. And they're walking along. And as they look down, they're praying and, you know, looking down, making sure they're not tripping. That's wisdom when you're praying and on prayer walks. They see a 50-pound note right beneath their feet. Now, they get back excited to know that what we had hoped to do for this young girl, we were able to do it. And I share that story because I want you to understand the gifts that God has given you are the gifts that you get to share to other people and make their life more rich. Every gift has good things in it. And as you live your gift to its best, then the people around you are going to rise with you in how God has made you. And celebrate that too. You know, we understand that we are fearfully and wonderfully made. There's no question, the Bible says that. So there's a blueprint that God has put in us, and He has put these motivational gifts in us. Sometimes we struggle with them, sometimes we have a hard time understanding them, but God knew that the you that would be you would be perfect for that gift and how He wants to use you. There's no question. Now, there are times, and having been a youth pastor, I've saw plenty of young people go through trauma. Sometimes it was drug addiction. Sometimes it was family matters. Sometimes it was bad decisions. And so I'm just going to say this one thing. Sometimes the gifts in a person who's broken because of poor decision-making can also be hard for them to find and maybe not even believe it. But inside them, God has made them to live in accordance with that gift. It's going to be their greatest journey in life if they do that. So we do make allowances when people have challenges in their life. Now, how does this relate to discipleship? You know, you will be your best disciple when you agree with God that He is the best creator. And that if we have that gift and He has ordained it for us, it's going to be the best life that we can live. And we're going to have the most effective. So to be a great disciple is to understand how God has wired you and then what your role will be in the local body in particular. And Greg and I both have to say it has been a joy to be here. And the life that is in the chapel is just tremendous. I mean, obviously it's been a little cold and rainy outside, but inside there's been a ton of laughter. There's been a beautiful thing to watch this church being together and loving one another. So we're giving you that permission to use your gift for the benefit of the church. That will be your response to God's blueprints for discipleship for who you are. And it'll be your greatest level of satisfaction. And that includes the manifestational gifts and the leadership gifts. So when you get back, my expectation is there going to be a pile of cards on Josh's desk saying from you, hey, we want to do this and we want to do that and we want you to stop doing that, because everybody always has to say that to the pastor about something, right? And I say, we are all in. Not in the chapel. Yeah, the chapel is absolutely in. So here's another thought about that too. For those of you that have been walking through the scriptures for many years, it'll be fun for you to look back at the great people, Abraham, Moses, and try to discern what their gift is. They will have had motivational gifts just like you and I have. And once we kind of overlay some things on there, it's quite interesting how God used the gift that He put in them to do the things that He was asking for them. So we hope to have a great night tonight, and Greg's going to come and share a few thoughts.
Absolutely. Before I start, I'd love to pause for a moment and just find out if, in the course of this morning, if there were any questions that came up, any takeaways, perhaps, that you have from this morning's session, or maybe even this afternoon as you've had additional conversations. Any thoughts that you'd like to share, perhaps, with the group, or anything that you would like answered, maybe, before we jump into this next segment? Anything top of mind? And I've had some great conversations, by the way, so thank you so much for the engaging conversations and the one-off questions. But any thoughts or any testimonies, even? Anything? Did God show anybody anything about themselves that was somewhat unique from this morning? That's good. Compassion perceiver server that you are. We were teasing a little bit. One of the Yeah, one of the things that is unique about the compassion perceiver combination is that they're on the opposite ends of the spectrum of the gifts. So, you know, that's a kind of an interesting thing to navigate when you have that mix. You can have on one side very black and white thinking, and on the other end, every color in the rainbow of feelings, right? You can. And so what I said to Irdi earlier was, perceiver compassion people are excellent with like counseling, excellent with intercession, because in one moment, they can carry that heaviness of the moment, right? They can carry that compassionate piece that we talked about earlier, feeling what the person is feeling, and then that perceiver gift can speak truth into the moment, all operating together. They're very close, for her, very close in number. So it's almost like a combination. It's like that Arnold Palmer drink that we talked about. There's lemonade, there's tea, they're combined, and when you drink it, you get a little bit of both as you're listening to Irdi talk or listening to her minister, right? You can get that straight, hard, here's the line, here's what God's saying, but you also get that compassionate piece that's overlaying and caring, right? That's an interesting combination to see. Not every gift combination is that way. So, anyone else? Any thoughts, comments from this morning? Please tell me that you extracted something from this morning. Was it beneficial? A few nods, maybe a wink. John, was it beneficial? Come on, give me something. What do you think? That's good. Excellent. Thanks for coming up earlier and sharing. We had a really good time together. We're going to go there right now. So we talked about the what we consider like all of the positives about the gifts this morning, right? In this segment, we'll talk about some of the things that can be stumbling blocks, some of the things that can be traps, some of the things that can keep us kind of wound in a circle, if you will, and maybe not moving forward, right? And, you know, I came up with this particular title, Effective Interactions, because I want to couch this in the framework of discipleship, right? And interacting with other people. So this morning we talked about our own gifts. You learned about your own gifts, the combination of gifts, right? So as we go through this next segment, I'll ask you to put your thinking caps on. Is that something that you do here in the States when we were young kids? You know, you'd put on this imaginary thinking cap, right? And you put it on and, you know, the teacher said, okay, now you tie it up, right? I want you to think objectively here, because when we go through these slides, I'm going to describe some of the negative things, but I'm also going to talk about how best to communicate to that gifting. So just work with me. You'll see the progression here. So the perceiver gift. We've laid the groundwork for the perceiver gift. So on the negative side of the perceiver gift, some of these traits can come to the surface. They point out blind spots. Who know? How many of you know that when you hear about a blind spot and it comes as a very hard word, that sometimes it's hard to hear, right? But a perceiver sometimes can be that way. They just speak it out because that's what they see in the moment. They can be direct. They can be blunt. They can be argumentative, not always, and they can be stubborn, right? So perceivers, forgive me. I'm just putting it out there. Chris is saying, I'm all that. And a bag of chips? Do you say that here? Okay. So here's the part that I want you to put on your thinking cap, okay? When you're communicating with a perceiver gift, you need to think about speaking very clearly your expectations, because that's fully the way that they communicate. So they want to be spoken to that way, all right? Fostering a partnership is huge. Like earlier, we talked about the nurturing piece of a perceiver gift, all right? So if you're talking to a perceiver, you want to communicate clearly defined expectations, foster partnership, and remember that your word is your bond. So Chris, when someone tells you they're going to do something, you expect them to, post haste, right? Absolutely. Absolutely. This is so vital in discipleship. So mentor, executive mentoring is the term that we've worked through. We call it executive coaching in the States. And I've had the privilege of working with people that are in, you know, management positions, attorneys that are in, like at the top of their practices. I've had these incredible God door-opening opportunities to spend time with them in what we would consider in the church circles discipleship opportunities, and in the States and in secular environments, we just call them executive coaching. But I've had these wonderful opportunities to be with people in those environments and speak into their lives, but also using these motivational gifts and some other tools. But what I found is, especially one person that comes to mind immediately, the strong perceiver gift, right? A lot of the times, because this particular person does not walk with the Lord, so a lot of the traits that I have experienced from this person are a lot of these very things that are in this box here. They're very blunt, very direct. They're kind of, you know, cutting in some ways when we communicate. Even though he wants the help, wants the guidance, wants the stuff, you know, the information that I'm sharing and conveying, that's his approach, and that's how he comes across. And so when I am talking to him, or when I'm trying to disciple him, as we say here, those three bullet points there are things that I absolutely have at the forefront of my mind when I'm engaging with him. Okay? Fostering the partnership piece, that is huge for that, because I want him to know that I'm coming alongside him and helping him walk through a certain journey and this stage in his life. Does that make sense? Remember, you have to tie those thinking caps really, really tight, right? All right? Perceivers. I know we've picked on Chris once. Any thoughts on any of those items there as it relates to maybe how you see yourself, or maybe an encounter that you've had, or any thoughts? Other perceivers, who are you? Irity, any thoughts come to mind, or anyone else, please? Let's make this interactive. Josh?
Yeah, my first one is perceiver.
We have lots of perceivers nodding around the room here. So we'll move on to the server. Again, keep that framework of discipleship in mind here. So, servers. Again, this is the downside of the server gift. They can be reluctant leaders, shy. I had to learn that shy thing about myself. When I was a young kid, I was always teased for having rosy cheeks. And it took, I mean, it was later in life that I realized that I was constantly embarrassed by things. But as a young person, you feel the feelings, right? And the way that it showed up for me was I just had these, I mean, I was a bit of a heavier kid, so I had these rosy cheeks. And I just remember those times of being having hot cheeks because I was so embarrassed by the smallest little things. I was a shy kid. Verbally challenged, that is a big thing with, can be a big thing with server gifts. We're more doers, not necessarily speakers, right? So even to be in front of you, this is something I've had to work on and get comfortable with, and you know, it didn't necessarily come naturally, you know. Next, perfectionists. Now, earlier this morning, I had perfectionist on the slide as a positive thing with the server gift. Well, perfectionism can also be a negative thing. It can be a stumbling block for those of us that are strong server gifted people, because sometimes we won't finish something because it's not perfect. Or maybe we won't even start something because it's not going to be perfect. All right, servers, is this resonating at all around the room? You feel that? And that can lead to procrastination. So even though we may have said, yes, Josh, I will do that, we may have said that with the best of intention in the moment, but somewhere in there, we've gotten stuck, we've been too busy doing other things, it's not going to be perfect, so we don't even want to start, so we procrastinate starting, we don't want to go back to the person and say, I'm sorry, I can't do it, so we're stuck there. You see that? And that's a place that you can get stuck, just like in the perceiver gift. You can get stuck in those places. You can get stuck as a server in that place. where you just don't move forward. Does that make sense? God wants us to be free. God wants us to mature in our giftings and walk forward. We can get stuck in those places. So if you're talking to or discipling or coaching or raising, and maybe you have a young kid who has a server gift, positive affirmation and encouragement, that's huge for the server gift, especially if it's one-on-one, right? It's wonderful to see that happen. It adds the wind to the sails of the server gift, I like to say, right? Communicate in terms of next actions, meaning servers are very detailed next step people, right? Unlike some of the other gifts that think bigger, right? Next steps, next action. Yeah, let's talk about the five-year plan, but let's talk about what we're going to do tomorrow. Let's talk about what we're going to do for the next 30 days. Sometimes when so much information is shared with the server gift about the big picture plan and all that, it's like a wall of information, and it's hard to distinguish what's first, what's the priority for us servers, okay? Last one, I mentioned it before, servers can be easily embarrassed. That's not always obvious, but it happens. I've seen it in times where people have tried to say the right thing in front of people and encourage a server, a gifted person, and you just see them kind of cower because they just want to be behind the scenes, keeping things going, busy. They don't need all of that recognition out front. Don't do that. They would prefer just one-on-one interaction and encouragement. So, thoughts, servers in the room? Any thoughts about anything that I've shared there? That's absolutely true. The thank you, the one-on-one thank you note, yes, that keeps us going. That adds that charge back to our battery. Well said. Yeah. Any other servers without putting you on the spot or making you feel embarrassed? Okay. Yes. Thank you for sharing that. Okay. Moving on to the teacher gift. Remember, this is our Sherlock Holmes of the gifts. They can be unemotional, can be uneasy in social situations, meaning socially awkward, right? Not always, but sometimes. They can become prideful. That prideful term is associated with a teacher-gifted person having, you know, certain knowledge in certain fields and feeling that they just know everything, and perhaps you can't even tell them something or get through to them because they know it all. You can't, you know, you kind of understand that sense there, right? So the encouragement to the teacher gift is to recognize that God is the only one that knows everything, that we should stay humble and recognize that there's always something to learn, that we can learn something from the youngest child that's here, we can learn something from looking out at those sheep. So stay open and don't become so, you know, proud that you're not reachable. So if you are discipling or coaching or raising a teacher-gifted person, provide content-rich feedback. They thrive on that. When you're talking to a teacher gift, they just love rich information. Those are rich conversations. When I've been around people that I recognize as teacher-gifted people, one of my first questions is to ask, what are you reading these days? What's on your bedside table? That will usually wind its way to about a 20-minute conversation. It's fantastic. So you can use that with any person that's in society or a friend or whatever, someone you see at the pub or at the restaurant or whatever, and you want to kind of reach out to them. That's a great connecting point with a teacher-gifted person. And the way that you identify them, they usually have a book with them at the pub. They're just reading it as they're sitting there having their dinner or what have you, okay? Offer factual information, ideas, and illustrations. Again, the broader you explain something and the more different contexts and the backgrounds, that the more it resonates with them. Lastly, logical and reasonable interactions are always appreciated with them. So if you're talking to a teacher gift, don't simply talk from the perspective of, well, I just feel, I just kind of think, I kind of assume, right? Again, if you're trying to land the plane, as we say, if you're trying to get through to them, logical and reasonable interactions are always great. All right, teacher-gifted people, how did I do with that? Or any thoughts with the box or any of those other things? Yes. So how do you combat that in your interactions with people? Sure. That's good. And then when you get to know them, you're more yourself, maybe, perhaps. Interesting.
Sticky toffee.
Sticky toffee. Is the sticky toffee settling in? This was my first time having it. It was quite delicious. Yeah, it's wonderful. Thank you. I mean, I think you didn't make it, but... The exhorter gift. So, again, in the box here, this is one of those things with the exhorter gift because they enjoy talking, right? They can be interruptive, opinionated. They can give unsolicited advice if they're not careful. Verbose, meaning talkative. And stretching the truth a bit. That's something when the exhorter gift is misused or not used in the most mature way. Okay, these things can show up. Okay, so again, if you're talking to, communicating with an exhorter gift, offering the realistic and practical information is always great. I'll jump to the third one because it's such a hot thing. Sometimes exhorters tend to be the only ones that are encouraging, that are hopeful, that are uplifting. And this third bullet is just a reminder that exhorters also need to be encouraged. They also need that lift, right? So, you know, in certain settings, if you kind of rely on a certain person to always be that one to be up and chipper and to be the encourager, just recognize they could be carrying a lot of burdens or a lot of cares and concerns, and give them a boost every so often. Make sense? Thoughts? Strategically deal with over-promising or exaggerated expectations. Again, that's kind of that truth stretching or whatever. So if you recognize that that's happening, maybe it's in a kid or in another person, just, you know, calmly ask, so, okay, was that really the case? Was that fish really that big? Was it more like that? Was that situation really that bad? Or was it more in line with this, right? So carefully deal with that. Not in front of others, just one-on-one. Sometimes the exhorter just kind of needs to be pulled in to the reality of the situation. Thoughts? Where are my exhorters? Come on, you're so quiet. I see a lot of furrowed brows tonight. Exhorters, where are you? Yes, Linda. You're reluctant to raise your hand, Linda. Any thoughts? Not really. Okay. Thank you, Linda. It's very kind. I want to encourage you to raise your hand more often, Linda. Sure. Thank you. Thank you. So the giver. So how in the world could a giver be stingy, manipulative, and a workaholic? That just doesn't sound right. It sounds like the opposite of a giver. Well, exactly. When a giver gift or giver-gifted person misuses their gifts, that's where they can wind up, thinking that it's all for them, right? Holding on to it. They can become manipulative, meaning they might give money into a situation or give resources into a situation, but they want to control it once it's released from their hands, right? So not giving it and trusting God with what's going to happen, but giving it, giving a nice little talking to at the same time to make sure that it's going to be, and then, you know, or, you know, pulling the strings to make, right? So just encourage, you know, release it. It belongs to God, and if he's prompting you to give it, release it, and trust that he's going to do with it what he desires. The last one, the workaholic, that's just simply the idea that it's all about money, and they just got to go and go and go and make money all the time because, you know, givers tend to be industrious and tend to be, you know, the kind of people that can make money, so the more they make, the more they want to make, right? And that's not really how it's supposed to be. So, 3 points about the giver gift, if you're communicating with them. You know, remember that they enjoy offering discreet and secretive assistance. So, let's say that you are prompted to encourage a giver to perhaps donate to something or to give to a new project or whatever. One-on-one communication, you know, maybe even say, look, if it's more comfortable for you to give and not have anyone know who it came from, then, you know, feel free to do that. Just kind of release them to to do it the way that they feel comfortable. One-on-one encouragement without the spotlight, again, very similar to the server gift. And so this is interesting. Givers don't do very well in competitive situations. That's one of those things that givers may have to learn about themselves. So don't put them in competitive situations. Don't put them in situations where there's this sense of having to, you know, fend for themselves or, you know, go for the goal, right? That's not how they're wired. And they will likely shrink back or not want to engage in that. That's simply because God wired them that way. So don't try to pressure them into that. Any thoughts, givers, as you hear about all those things? Anything becoming more clear? That's profound. It reminds me of a story that happened with a close friend of mine who oversees an organization, NGOs here, or maybe, yeah, NGOs in the States that focuses on Niger, Africa, right? And back in the early 2000s when this endeavor was starting, his first name's Michael, he had been in Niger for a period of time, and he was leaving, right, heading back to the States. And he's a person who enjoys nice clothes, right, like nice suits and shirts or whatever. And in passing, he passed this young Nigerian, young man, and he complimented the young man's shirt. He just said, "Oh, that is a great shirt." And there was a, you know, slight language barrier, but he just said, "That's a beautiful shirt." And this guy from Niger, right, Niger, like fourth world, right? Third world, fourth world, very impoverished place. This guy begins to take his shirt off in front of my friend Michael. And he took his shirt off and he handed it to my friend Michael. Now, my friend Michael is, you know, well off. You know, he has custom suits made. He has custom shirts made. He's a well-off guy. This young man gave him his shirt. He handed him his shirt. And he's like, "No, I don't want the shirt." You know, he's like, no, I like the shirt. I mean, and the guy said, "No, have it." And it rocked his world. Absolutely profoundly rocked his world. You know, here's a guy who could buy any shirt he wants. But this person who had very little handed. And so what you're touching on is that spirit of generosity. It's not based on how much you have. It's based on how much generosity you have, right? So you gave out of generosity, even though you may have had little, you recognized that someone else had less, your generosity did that. And that exchange, I mean, God blessed it, obviously. What God has done through our friend Michael, through that endeavor and so many other divine appointments, is his calling, he found his calling in missions to Niger, Africa. And we've had how many trips? I don't know.
75, maybe.
Yeah. Teams of people going through this young man, this man, my age, 53, yeah, having those types of generous encounters in an impoverished situation. Make sense? I love that about the giver gift. That young man, he must have been a giver, right? In the moment, it's just profound. I love that story. The administrator gift, okay? This is our big picture person, right? Loves fine details. Some of the things that could be challenging areas for the administrator gift can be domineering, messy, callous, neglect routine work. The one that I'll hit, the callous one, is the one, I think I mentioned this earlier. The administrator gift, big picture person, let's say they're extreme administrator, high classic administrator gift. Big projects, big plans, large goals. It's going to take a huge sum of money to get it done. Lots of people, right? That vision is cast by that administrator, and all of a sudden, people start throwing tomatoes at the idea or onions at the idea, criticisms. That happens regularly with the administrator gift, meaning questioning how we're going to do it. You must be crazy. There's no possible way that it can happen, right? They get all of the target. They're targeted for that type of critique and criticism, right? So what can happen very easily with that administrator gift is they can suddenly become very hard-hearted, as we say, where they just don't want to listen to anyone, whether it's a good idea or anything, right? So what we encourage the administrator gifts to do, as I mentioned earlier today, keep your heart open to people. Because the bigger your goal, the bigger your vision, the bigger the project, the more people it takes to accomplish it. So you have to be open to people because you need people to get the work done. Make sense? Yeah? So brainstorming, they love brainstorming if you're talking to administrator give. They love and enjoy success and achievements. There's nothing wrong with that. Remind administrators to delegate well and release very healthily, right? Don't hold on to it. Don't ask someone to do something and then check up on them, you know, 5 minutes later, right? That's not healthy, right? Administrator gifts, any thoughts around that? We only have one more to go through. I know we're this is a lot of information. Any thoughts, administrators? Moving on. Last one. Compassion gift. Can have a moderate to slower pace in life. Can be very indecisive or just indecisive, right? Feelings easily hurt. Remember, this is the heart of your organization. It's the heart of the body. This is the heart of the household if you have a compassion person in your house. Can be compromising. So this touches on the question you asked earlier, which will be covered tomorrow as well. And late. Tardiness is a part of the compassion downside, right? But the compromising one that was asked here earlier, what can happen with the compassion gift that's not a good thing is their boundaries can be breached, or they don't have clearly defined boundaries in their lives. It could be time-related. It could be relational, relationship-related. It could be a lot of things, but basically there can be compromise because those clear boundaries aren't defined. And sometimes it takes having to go through a lot of experiences, a lot of hardships, a lot of brokenheartedness, a lot of unfortunate situations for the compassionate person to realize, perhaps my boundaries need to be out here. Maybe I need to carve out more time for myself to recuperate, or maybe I need to keep certain personality types at bay. Maybe I need to just draw that line and keep things a bit farther away because I need to be protected, because I'm susceptible. As a compassion person, I'm susceptible to certain influences and they can take me down. Does that make sense? Okay? So, compassion people, they love harmonious relationships. They're vital, right? Be aware of causes that they support. So if it's a compassion person that loves animals or loves, you know, certain people with certain disabilities or certain things, recognize that, applaud that, encourage that in the person that you're discipling. And last but not least, and I've touched on it already, respect, protect, and guard personal interactions. So just know that if you're coaching, discipling, or mentoring a compassion person, that you just need to recognize that their hearts can be wide open, that there needs to be an understanding of what discipleship looks like with a compassion person versus perhaps some of the other gifts. And you just want to navigate that very well. You don't want to hurt their feelings. You don't want to say things that will be cutting, right? You want to enter into moments with them so that they understand that your heart is there, that your heart is in it, that your motives are pure, right? Does that make sense? Again, this is when you're reaching that compassion person, you're talking to that compassion person. That's the very last one. And I know that we're going to go into a time of worship. But before we do, any thoughts, just broadly across? That was a lot of information, I realize it, but did that clarify some things? Did that help bring some things to the surface, perhaps, that may not have been discussed earlier this morning? Again, this is kind of that other side of the giftings that perhaps needs attention. Yeah. Okay. So one of the things, you know, keep in mind, if that's true, that they see you a certain way, and they recognize certain traits, but they don't know what's going on in the inside, right? And a lot of times with a compassion person, you can keep those things tapped down inside. And you may not it may come out as an expression of something that's harsh, or it could be angry, it could be, you know, immediate. But on the inside, what's really going on? Is it that compassion that's bubbling up on the inside? Is it, you know, so only you can answer those. So it might be fun to take it over again. I know it was a marathon taking it the first time. Maybe the next time it'll be a little bit shorter. But it would be fun to do that again. Yeah. Any other thoughts before we shift back into worship? I shared this material in a governmental setting. 75 people. They're all in the finance department of this particular group. And when I shared this segment and was talking about some of the you know, downsides, this particular person happened to be a compassion person. Round tables, 10 people to a table, so this is a pretty large room, right? And as I was going through these things, and again, I was in a secular setting, so I wasn't using a lot of the terms that I've used here. This one woman stood up. She's like, "That's me! That's me! You're describing me!" I'm like, "Okay, and, you know, would you like to tell us more since you're standing up right now?" She's like, "Yes. You know, no one ever told me that that I needed to set boundaries. No one ever told me because I was the kid that brought home the bird with the broken wing when I was young, and or the dog that had been hit. I'd bring that one home, and or the guy, you know, that was hurting. I was always that person." And the way that I tee this up is I made up this story in the moment, like a parable, like, you know, like Jesus would do, you know. And I made up this story about this college person who, when it was time to go home for Thanksgiving holiday, decided to bring home this young man who didn't have a place to go, and he was a little disheveled and had some, you know, deficits in his life, right? She brought him home just as a friend, right? Brought him home at Thanksgiving, and they had a good Thanksgiving. Her family welcomed this guy in, and it was a fun thing, you know. And then they go back to college, and then at Christmas he comes back again. He looks a little bit better, but, you know. So anyway, the story progressed, and I just said basically, before you know it, they were dating, and they were talking about getting married, and it was the situation where this compassion person started in that relationship just trying to help this broken person, and over time they were heading towards, you know, getting married. And I told that story, and I just said, look, and I just made it up on the spot. I said, remember, compassion people, we manage projects, we don't marry projects. Because in the moment, you know, the way I developed the story was this person was trying to marry this person to make them better, and there was this constant making better and helping them, right? And I drew the distinction in saying, you need to draw some boundaries there. You have to be careful with your heart, because once they're in, right, suddenly the lines get blurred, and it goes from you feeling compassionate and trying to help them, and all of a sudden you think you've fallen in love with that person, and really perhaps God just wanted you there for a season to help them through some things, right? And that's when the woman just raised her hand, and she's like, "That's me! That's me! That's my story," right? No one ever told me I needed to draw up. No one ever told me. And then she said, "That's why I'm going through a divorce right now. That's why all this is happening." And then this other woman stands up, because she's trying to care for her friend, right? This woman says, "Well, suppose that person won't ever change. Suppose he won't change." And I said, "Hang on, wait a minute, ladies." Because we're in the middle of a session like this, much, much larger. And they're just going for it, you know? And I said, "Hang on." I said, "I didn't say anything about manipulating that other person to make them change. I was talking about your gift, your compassion gift, recognizing that you should limit how you extend yourself to people, because before long you can compromise, and you get into these moments when your feelings are there, and it's there, right?" And it was a real moment, but it was one of those divinely appointed teachable moments that only the Holy Spirit could have prompted in this governmental business setting. But it was brilliant, because people around the room recognize, "Oh, that's how it happens. I see that. I know that lady. She's lived that out. And then, hey, it's not a manipulation thing. So it was this layered moment where God just used it. And there was, I mean, that ended up being like the best part of the whole 4 hours that we were together. That moment. It was really, really cool. So, are you going to pray? I will pray, and I will hand it back to you, sir. So, Father, we thank you for our time together thus far. I trust that you are at work here, that you are doing exceedingly and abundantly more than we could ask, think, or imagine, and that the hearts of your people are being enlightened and illuminated. You're showing people things about their giftings and their wirings. You're also giving glimpses of your designs for them, and I thank you for that, and I pray that you will continue to do that throughout our weekend and going forward for this local body of believers. I just trust, God, that you're at work here, that the gifts that we are imparting and bringing and illuminating will be gifts that will be brought to life and used for your honor and your glory and for your fame and for the maturing of your people and this local community. So may your work be accomplished, God. May every aspect of what you have desired for this weekend come to fruition. And may your will be done, dear God. In Jesus' name, amen.